How do you organize your records? Artists, titles, color?
Artists.
Yeah.
Okay. And then do you do discography by release date?
Oh, I do not. It's artists and then album name. The album themselves are in alphabetical order.
The other day I saw a story about organizing by color. And I was like, that is nutty. Welcome to the fourth episode of Jay and Joey on the Record. I'm Joey.
And I'm Jay.
291 left. Jay, we're making some headway.
Putting a little dent in it, yeah.
One piece at a time. Okay, so today, what's the plan?
So today we're going to talk about albums where either the band or the title of the album has some sort of a connection to a place one of the two of us have lived.
Where did you come from? Where did you go? Where did you come from, Cotton Eye Jay? What's leading us off?
We're going to talk about Kansas. The band. We're going to talk about the debut album by the band Kansas. It's called Kansas. Let's see. Released March 8, 1974 on Kishner Records. What do you know about Kansas, Joey? State or band?
The band or the state? Let's see. First off, is Kishner Records, was that an independent label? Do you know?
No idea. I should have checked into that, but it's a K-I-R-S-H-N-E-R.
Interesting. Yeah, so Kansas, I have been there once for 8 days, yeah, when I was crewing a cross-country cycling trip. We came into Garden City, left through Overland Park, and saw all the beauty in between. What's your tie to Kansas?
I'm from Kansas. I lived most of my life in Kansas. I've lived a few other places, California, Colorado, but I've lived most of my life in Kansas. Not always been a huge fan of the band Kansas, by the way, but so this is their debut album. Let's talk about the cover real quick. I know we did covers last week, but this one's got a painting that is by a Kansas artist named John Stewart Curry. It's a mural, actually, that's inside the Kansas State Capitol building. And it's abolitionist John Brown standing over two dead soldiers with people just kind of going to battle behind him. And he's larger than life. He's like 16 feet tall compared to everyone else. So it's kind of gnarly.
It's a massive mural. It's called Tragic Prelude. Is that the name?
Yes, it is.
Okay. And it's one of my favorite album covers of all time, just because I'm a big John Brown stan. Is the original in the Kansas Capitol, or is that a copy?
It is the original in the Kansas Capitol. Huh. Yeah, and it's huge. There's a lot more to it than what you see on this album cover, obviously. It's reference to Kansas being kind of the kickoff point for the American Civil War. So there was a lot of fighting going on in Kansas over whether Kansas would be a free state or a slave state. And John Brown was very much on the free state side of things. And that's why he's really connected to Kansas in a big way. So pretty cool. I thought it was an awesome choice for a debut album cover.
But yeah, John Brown, of course, died in what would become West Virginia at Harper's Ferry when he led a siege. I mean, we could easily turn this into
history.
John Brown. Yeah, it's a John Brown podcast. Pretty freaking quickly. Yeah, he's an interesting figure.
So let's dive into the album. So this is Kansas's first album. Kansas, this iteration of Kansas that put this album out was actually a merging of two Topeka, Kansas-based musical groups to form what would then become the eventual Kansas. And one thing I noticed in listening to this album is you can kind of tell, like, there's a few songs that are just your standard classic rock song with some prog elements, you know, the keyboards and stuff. And there are some songs on this thing that are just like 9.5 minutes long, prog, key solo, organ, all that stuff. So did you pick up on that at all?
Yeah, I did. It sounded like when you said it's two bands who formed, that makes a lot of sense. It really does sound like, okay, you guys do this, then we'll do one of your tracks, and then you'll do one of ours. And they kind of trade it off back and forth.
Especially the first couple songs on this one. So like, Can I Tell You and Bringing It Back. Can I Tell You is pretty proggy, but like Bringing It Back, it's just more of like a standard 70s rock song. It's good. You still have a nice, cool violin solo in there. And then the obvious piano and organ. And that's one thing I really appreciated listening to this album is the violin playing. I really got a kick out of it.
Dare I say this whole album maybe influenced our Boys and Dregs?
Quite possibly. Some of that elements for sure.
One of the first notes I have, and I think it's one of the earlier tracks, it's Bringing It Back.
Yep. Track 2.
Yeah. It is solid boogie rock. Maybe Prague is growing on me a little bit. You know, maybe I'll have a change of heart by the time we get to Rush.
I giggled, man. We got to get you on board with Rush. Let's go.
I mean, but I was shaking my butt off to it. I wish the track was longer. It was a solid one.
Yeah, it was really good. Another thing I hadn't necessarily ever really appreciated with Kansas, but the next song, Lonely Wind, it's more of a ballad, but some pretty nice vocals. And all through this, there's some really, really cool vocal harmonies on a lot of the songs.
I guess it's a lot more, maybe beautiful is the wrong word, but then, you know, you're pulled right back in with, I don't know how to say any of these names, Perku. And yeah there's some really nice elements going on here.
I like that one. Perku is like 10-minute long song, very symphonic. A lot of these are very symphonic, just kind of big songs. Death of Mother Nature Suite's another one, nice little bit harder rocking one actually, which I like that too. Just going back, the fourth song on the album, Balexes. Do you have any notes on that one? Because that one I really, really like. That's the one that I thought to myself, this is almost a metal song.
I don't have any notes on that one.
Man, that one had some really cool vocal harmonies. I mean, they're just like a big long ow, but like
okay, yeah,
perfectly in tune. And then almost like some of those metal, 80s metal singing, but it was harmonized. So I thought that was really cool. And then there's a really sick organ solo on that one that got me standing up. Cheering.
I don't know. I was a lot more surprised. One thing that kind of took me back with these guys, this is the first time I had ever actually seen a picture of the band. Oh, and they all look like they could have been pro wrestlers in one of the old NWA territories. Like they just all look like they'll just kick the shit out of you. They might be the nicest guys on earth, but someone's getting an ass whooping. I mean, it was my ears. Like they did a number on them and I had a fun time listening to this one.
Me too. Yeah. Yeah. And you're exactly right. They're on the back of the album here and one of them's got to be 6'8" at least. Yeah. Pair suspenders with a white checkered shirt. That dude is monstrous. He's got red hair. Like I would not want to mess with that guy.
And I saw a more recent picture of them and one of them, it might've been the same guy, had an eye patch.
Oh shit. Yeah.
Yeah. Like just like perennial badasses. Can we talk about Death of Mother Nature, the closer?
Yes.
I absolutely loved it. Great, great tune to close things on. This is the hardest environmental protest song that I can think of, especially the part where it's like, now she's going to die. Talking about Mother Nature. It was serious business. Like these dudes weren't playing.
Yeah, I like that one a lot. That's, you know, some of those longer, pruggier ones earlier, honestly, because it's a longer song, I kind of lose track of the vocals, but Death of Mother Nature Suite, I was all over that. It was awesome. Another one that's a little bit harder rocking too. Pretty kick-ass. A little bit more hard rocking than I expected it to be.
I mean, I just didn't know any songs off of here before listening. And I guess it because everyone knows Carry On My Wayward Son. And I expect a kind of corny, that kind of showy mainstream prog. And it was pretty dope.
I don't have anything else to say on that one.
Last thing I have to add is if you're ever in Harper's Ferry, West Virginia, hit up the John Brown Wax Museum. There's a miniature version of Tragic Prelude. I have a picture of me standing with arms wide open, just like John Brown himself.
Believe it or not, I've actually been there.
Really?
Yeah, I have. Did an Appalachian Trail hike that kicked you out in Harper's Ferry. Yeah, I felt terrible. I'd overpacked. Like, it's the first backpacking trip I'd ever been on. I had way too much shit. I was carrying a mandolin. And by like the fifth day, my back was just an absolute disaster. So we got some medicine and some food in Harper's Ferry.
That's awesome. And got to see the creepy wax museum.
Hell yeah.
Where are we going next?
We're going to talk about Just Another Band Out of Boston.
Boom.
So we're going to talk about Boston's debut album, Eponymous. I'm terrible at saying that word.
Yeah, yeah.
Named it after themselves. It's the Boston album, Boston. All right. So debut album came out August 25th, 1976 on Epic Records. What did you think about this Epic album?
Yeah, the Mighty Mighty Bostons. Never had to knock on wood. That's what we listen to, right? I loved it. Yeah, let's get into it.
Let's talk about it, man. So everyone's going to know most of these songs, but yeah. Hearing them outside of the radio context and more in album form was something I had not done for a very, very long time. And I loved it. This album rocked me. Like, I was into it from the beginning and all the way through. It was awesome.
My context of this album was formed from those singles and hearing Boston as singles throughout the years and never collectively. So I heard so many of these songs as singles or in video games and separately. And I was like, meh, I just hadn't given them much thought. In fact, one of my first associations with the band when somebody mentioned Boston was their version of the Star Spangled Banner before the 2002 Fiesta Bowl, which I don't know if you've ever seen it or not, but they just kind of like shredded their way through it and they're wearing like jorts. It was wild.
Okay. I know what but after this.
But hearing all these songs together, this album rips and it gave me a completely new appreciation for Boston.
And let's back up here. Why are we talking about Boston this week?
Oh, yes. So I lived in Boston. Clearly my accent gives it away. I lived in Boston for a couple of years before starting graduate school down here in South Carolina.
Nice. And any highlights from Boston?
Where do I even begin? Oh, no, I think it's a great city. I think it definitely has a lot packed into it and a lot more than people realize, and very walkable, very accessible, wonderful city.
Yeah, super cool. I have relatives in that area and have been there several times, and it's really fun, really easily walkable. Like you said, the cemeteries there are just amazing because there are just graves from like right the very beginning. So that's pretty cool to see. I always get a kick out of those kind of things. And then,
yeah. And you can just be walking around anywhere and like, oh, there's a grave from 400 years ago.
So the first time I went there, I was a little kid and we went to the Boston Aquarium and they had a seal that they had sort of trained to talk. Like, how are you? How are you? How are you? Or something like that. It's kind of how it like, talked. And, well, obviously it's dead now. It's been a long time ago, but well, I don't know how long seals live. Maybe it's still running around, but anyway, very, very clearly remember that from when I was a little kid.
That's
memory. It might not even be, I might've that up, but I'm almost positive there's a talking seal at the Boston Aquarium.
Well, according to this, harbor seals may live to about 25 to 30 years. So if you go back,
he's probably dead.
It could be there, you know. Hey, Jay, I remember you. How are you?
How the hell are you? No. So anyway, those are the Boston highlights. Now let's talk about the Boston highlights. So this one kicks off debut song, debut album, More Than a Feeling, which might be one of the greatest rock songs ever written. I love it.
Taking a rocket ship out of the gate, like you said, that clearly their most famous song. I was grooving, man. I was clapping.
Yes. Oh. The hand claps on that song are fantastic. And then you've got just huge soaring vocals and one of the coolest guitar tones. This whole album is full of just really slick sounding, beefy guitar sounds. I love it. Doesn't get a lot better to me than More Than a Feeling. I love that song.
It swept over me.
Yes. I hadn't heard that one in a while. I haven't been listening to the radio very much. I'm sure it's on the radio all the time still on classic rock stations. Hadn't heard it in a long time. Definitely put the speakers to the test when that one came on. I love that one. So
no doubt. Yeah. And then, you know, then someone call a mechanic because the struts on Peace of Mind are working overtime, baby.
Oh, yeah. Same thing, too. It's that Boston sound, like just massive guitars, epic vocals, catchy as hell. Love the lyrics on this one. You know, people living in competition. All I want is to have mine. Like, hell yeah, me too, man. I just want to feel good about stuff.
You know? Yeah. On the surface, it seems a little cheesy, but I don't know. There's so much passion and conviction. And what's his name? Tom Scholz from the band, or however you say his last name, Scholz. Dude's an MIT grad. He's an engineer, you know, working a 9-to-5. And just hated that life and, you know, whips up something like this. You know, oh, man.
Yeah. Awesome.
Very connective. I'm calling it my song of the week.
like I said before, the first two songs are just, you're really getting introduced to that Boston power pop sound, like just huge, soaring, epic songs. And then you get into the next one, which is Foreplay Long Time, which starts out completely different.
It spins off. It goes a little spacier. You know, you start getting that the little electronic organ teasing out.
Very long organ intro. That's the Foreplay part. And then you get into Long Time, and it's just your traditional Boston song. But I used to have a burn CD that I made back in high school. And I just wrote on it volume, and then I had an up arrow on it because I was cool. And this Foreplay Long Time was actually the first song on that CD because I love that organ intro because it's such a buildup. And then it just comes in with a screaming guitar to go into Long Time, the second half of it. It's just awesome.
What else was on that CD?
So a lot of Metallica. Okay. I think there's probably a System of a Down song or two there. Probably, I don't know. Oh, wait. There's a Bon Jovi song actually that comes in with like super huge drums, like, yeah, it's got a little harder rocking guitars in it too. I don't like Bon Jovi. Like that song a lot. That was on there. So they played this one before K-State football games. That's the other reason I like it. Kansas State University. For like 30 years. Like the football coach there really had a lot of control over the set list. And that it was definitely kicking off with some Bon Jovi.
Bill Snyder?
Oh, yeah. Yes, sir. He's like all the songs is like, they call it Snyder music. So it's like you're kicking like Van Halen. What else was on there? All sorts of just that stuff. Bon Jovi.
Oh my God. I never knew that about Taco Bell.
Yeah, man. Good stuff. Let's keep rolling though. Rock and Roll Band. That's what next on the docket here. What'd you think about that song?
Yeah, I was ready to grow a dirt squirrel and put on some bell bottoms by the time that one hit.
A song about busting your ass to make it. Like, I love it. Like, just another band out of Boston.
Another song that I absolutely just enjoyed way too much was Something About You. As I was searching for it, I sent you this video. I was trying to figure out, like, what soundtrack was this on? Why is this so familiar? Why does this resonate so much? But I got sidetracked when I found this fan video that someone made that basically looked like a screensaver with pictures of Renee Zellweger and Liv Tyler from the 90s just pasted over top of it. I'm definitely going to share that. It was nuts, but I love how freeing this song feels. And I mean, this person felt free enough to make that insane fan video and singing along, dancing.
What do you think that guy's up to that made that video?
I just hope one of those two people has seen that video and just kind of appreciated, like, hey, thanks, random person out there. I appreciate the effort that you put into this.
Liv Tyler on the YouTube video. Hey, cool video. Thanks for sharing. Not creepy at all. No, I mean, I'm with you. So that one's same sort of thing too. I mean, big ass vocals, roaring guitars. It's Boston. My notes for that one is, this song is Boston. This whole damn album is Boston. And apparently I love Boston. Like, I love this thing beginning to end.
Yeah, that's how I felt. When this ended, I was like, I guess I'm a Boston fan.
Yeah, me too. It makes me wonder how many Boston adjacent things that I've avoided over the years are actually good.
A couple more Boston notes. I had no idea that the spaceships on the cover were guitars. I just never cared or looked into Boston enough.
No shit.
I saw it in the YouTube comment section.
I got in front of me, like right now on my desk. That's the first time I've ever noticed.
I can't tell you how many times I've seen that album cover. And
yeah, millions.
And then, of course, the tragic story of Brad Delp committing suicide in the mid-aughts, I guess it was. And do you know who took over on vocals for like a 3 or 4 year stretch? Ooh. After he died.
I do not know.
It was none other than Michael Sweet from Striper.
Sick.
Yeah, and he did it justice, I'll say.
Really? Nice.
Yeah, there's a good video actually of Striper doing Peace of Mind.
I think it's funny that you and I both know a guy who knows a guy who got hit in the head with a Bible at a stripe.
That's, I think when it comes to live show stories, that one is a top three for me, probably contender for one or two. Like, I have personal stories, but someone getting hit in the face with a Bible at a striper show, that's just so meta.
Yeah. I almost had to mute my microphone because I was about to bust out laughing thinking of that. All right, cool. So, all right, final thoughts on Boston. I loved it. I think you loved it.
Yep.
Not much else to say about it. Hey, everyone. Jay here.
And Joey.
We're having a lot of fun doing this, and we're grateful to everyone who's tuned in so far. As the podcast grows, we hope to keep everything as independent as possible.
Which is why we've created a Buy Me a Coffee campaign.
Buy Me a Coffee is a great way to support us for as little as $1 or $4 per month, or $40 per year. We're still coming up with bonuses and perks, but we hope you'll consider supporting us while we iron out those things.
Interested in being the oil to this machine? You can find us at buymeacoffee.com/Jay and Joey or find the link in the show notes.
Thanks, everyone, and enjoy the show.
Thank you all. And now let's get into the hate zone.
All right. First up on the hate zone today, Ambrosia, Life Beyond L.A. This album is by the band Ambrosia. This album came out August 12th, 1978 on Warner Brothers Records. We are listening to it today because I lived in LA for a short period of time, about a year.
What were you doing there?
Just kind of hanging out, man.
What else are you going to do in LA?
I was just chilling. I graduated college. You know what? The whole story. I'll give you the whole story. So I was in a bowling league in college, and one of my buddies got a job in Los Angeles from the bowling league. And he was like complaining one night, you know, I'm going to have to go out to LA. I don't know anybody out there. I don't, you know, it's going to be tough finding a place that I can afford by myself. So I was like, you know, dude, I'll go with you. Like, oh, by the way, I'm very drunk at this point. So I said, I'd go with him. I even filled out a contract on a bar napkin and signed it and gave it to him.
Oh, wow.
Next day I called him. I was like, or no, he called me. He's like, hey, are you sure? I mean, you don't have to. I was like, no, let's go. So anyway, I moved out to LA, lived there for a year, loved it. Fresh out of college, I would never go back, but it was wonderful when I was 22, 23 years old and single.
For sure. I could see that. You know, when you said bowling league, I'm thinking bowling league. I'm thinking LA. I'm thinking that video for Lit's My Own Worst Enemy and that being the inspiration to it.
I was thinking more Big Lebowski, but yeah, I'm with
you. Yeah, that's a little cooler.
I gotta say, I can't remember the Lit My Own Worst Enemy, but I'm sure it's very good.
So yeah, Life Beyond LA.
What do you think about this bad boy? Did you know Ambrosia before diving into this?
I did. I knew their sound a little bit. Yeah. Tell me, you said you got this for a dollar?
This was a dollar. Yes. This one came from the record auction I go to every couple of years, and actually Boston came from there as well. Ooh. As did Kansas. So all three of these albums I paid a total of like $6 for. So that's where it came from. I actually had never heard of Ambrosia when I bought this. Actually, this could have fit into last week because I didn't buy this because I liked the cover. I bought it because the cover is ridiculous. There's a guy on the left hand side of the thing with a perm, like a white jumpsuit on, white boots. He looks like a janitor in all white. Then you got dude in the middle, flowing hair, shirt unbuttoned, some sort of a huge cuffed sweater. And then guy over to the right is looking very 80s, extremely 80s. Really cool.
And like, what are they standing in front of? It looks like a bad Star Trek set. Like they snuck onto Star Trek and some pictures before security saw them and kicked them out.
It's very odd. And it was a dollar. So, hey, I'll take it.
Yeah, give me your thoughts.
Well, a dollar may have been a little high on the price, but there were elements of this that I actually did like. There were some really slick guitar solos actually on a lot of these songs, but let's talk about what it is. I mean, it's extremely poppy, synth-based, right?
Okay, I'm about to take the gloves off. My first note for this is, this is the neck turd of the gods. It's in the same music family as Steely Dan, and I can't think of a worse lineage to be associated with.
So I love Steely Dan, but I don't think this is quite the same music lineage as Steely Dan. But we'll talk about that later because I'm real Steely Dan albums.
I mean, you're just plunked right into an Atari game or just a really bad Wes Craven film ripoff. It just was doing nothing for me.
Yeah. Let's see. Song two, notes, says real bad. Didn't write anything else. Song three. Song four, If Heaven Could Find Me. Pretty bad, but I don't mind the guitar solos. The dueling guitar solos were decent. Enjoyed those quite a bit. Moving through here, crappy whiny vocals, I say. Let's see. I mean, honestly, not my thing. Not my jam. Enjoyed some of it, but on the whole, not my thing.
Was track two Art Beware?
Sure was, yes.
Yeah, so I put Art Beware Lost Me. So there's soft rock and then there's squishy rock.
Yes, very squishy.
Just, the only way this is Ambrosia for me is if I was just rescued off a desert island and hadn't eaten regular food for months, and then this is the food of the gods.
Like, finally got the Ambrosia reference. I'm with you.
I don't know. I have a question for you, but I don't have any more notes.
Go. Fire away.
Okay, so picture it's 1978 and this album comes on. Where are you and what are you doing?
Probably, I mean, I'm not born yet, but I guess I'm probably trying to pick up a chick. Probably.
It to me, my first thought was, this is a fondue party and someone starts passing around the key bowl.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I'm just kind of, greasy. Slimy, not my thing. Not my thing.
Yeah, slimy's perfect.
The one song I did have more significant notes on, do you remember Angola? And not because it was a good song, but did you remember that song?
I do.
Weird little jaunty sounds.
Yeah.
I did kind of enjoy how weird it was. Like, it was weird and I liked the weirdness of that one. I hated the chanting at the end of it, though.
Yeah, it snuck its way on there somehow.
Oh, man. You got any other notes?
Absolutely not.
All right. Sorry, Ambrosia. All right. Next, we're going to talk about America and their debut album, America. This one came out on December 26, 1971, and it is America's debut studio album. What'd you think of this?
Yeah, so named after the West Side Story song of the same name.
Actually, so the name is kind of interesting. So this band is three American kids who were the sons of U.S. Air Force personnel stationed in London. So they formed in Britain and they actually called themselves America because they didn't want the Brits to think they were British people impersonating American accents.
I mean, I'm sure the Brits appreciated not being associated with this music.
we're going to talk about it. Okay, cool.
So, but that's good to know because I knew they had their origin was in the UK. I had no idea Americans were at fault.
All right, so let's go on into it then. America, what do you think of track one here, Riverside?
Again, this is one where I don't have much notes on.
So I like this band. And I like this album. It's a lot of, so if you don't know America, you do know Horse With No Name. Everybody knows that. Not my favorite song on the album, but I actually really got a kick out of it. I like the harmonies. I like the acoustic guitar. I'm a big Crosby, Stills, Nash fan. So that kind of stuff, I'm into it.
Yeah, the Crosby, I actually have an exact note about Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young. This is going to, I'm not going to say this first part because it's a little too rude maybe. But to me, it's like someone said, what if the local councilman made a band kind of like Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young?
It's kind of funny because they actually were doing acoustic covers of Crosby, Stills, Nash songs when they were traveling around England trying to gain some traction. So that's how they actually got their start. So yeah, I mean, they do sound very Crosby, Stills, Nash, Young-ish. I liked it though. I mean, so actually the people that constitute America. A couple of guitarists, the bass player, they actually jump around and trade what they're playing, 12-string guitar, 6-string guitar. And then the drumming and stuff is just studio musicians that they've brought in. And then they sing, obviously. I don't know. I like the harmonies. I love the acoustic. I like the little hand drums popping around in the background. I didn't mind it.
Is this one that you had heard prior to purchasing before?
Absolutely. Kind of funny. Probably one of my earliest musical memories of any kind of music at all is my parents listening to this album, and specifically A Horse with No Name, when I was a little kid in the basement of a house I grew up in.
So you have like some very close personal.
I mean, I've been listening to this kind of stuff, but I still love this kind of stuff anyway. Like, I like acoustic guitars, and it's not even the most vivid of memories. I just remember like a snip of listening to this song as a little tiny kid. So anyway, let's see. I do have a lot of Crosby, Stills, Notes in here. The next song after after Horse with No Name is Here. Tons of Crosby, Stills, Nash in that.
Yeah, they definitely know the harmonies. I don't know. I don't even have an idea what song this is on, but there's one where it's like, sitting by the fireside with a book in your hand. Something to that extent. They did some interesting vocal breaks and harmonization throughout that.
Yeah. I mean, definitely some lyrics that maybe aren't the most, like, the heat was hot. Okay. I mean, I get it. The heat was hot. That one's also got, there were plants and birds and rocks and things. There was sand and hills and rain. Like, okay. I mean, he's the guy's in the desert. I get it. So not the most creative lyrics. I mean, I need you. That's the one with the piano. Super sappy lyrics on that one. I don't know. The first couple of songs are great. The last half of the album, I'm not going to defend nearly as stringently as I did the first half. Side B wasn't good at all, really. Donkey Jaw, I like. Do you have any notes on Donkey Jaw?
That was the one where I was like, I wouldn't completely bash this, but it just, stuff like this just doesn't resonate.
Well, and I'm with you too. I mean, I maybe acted like I was going to defend it a little bit more hard than this. I mean, the second half of it wasn't good. It's kind of boring, but Donkey Jaw I liked. A lot of jamming, percussion sounds, a nice little solo in there. Did you happen to pay attention to the lyrics on the last song, Pigeon Song?
No.
Dude, I had a pigeon by the name of Friend. Dunn shot him in the head. What? Pigeons? I think he maybe even kills a guy in the lyrics. It's
okay. So when you say that, I absolutely remember this now.
I'd never heard that song before, and it was very strange.
Yeah. Had me a railroad down on the ridge, but I done bloated up the bridge.
Yeah.
Had me a dog, I done put an end.
Yeah.
I think that like made me legitimately really dislike it.
Yes. I'm with you. As soon as he said, I had a dog, I was like, something bad better not happen to this dog or else I'm going to be pissed off. He put it to an end. You're right. Who are you, America?
Yeah. You hippie backwash.
Yeah. Get out of here.
My mind got to wondering during this a little too much. And I got to thinking about like the bands I'd be most embarrassed about getting beat up to. And I think America would like absolutely be in my top five. Like you don't want to get beaten up, but like you really don't want to get beaten up while America is playing in the background.
I can't imagine. That's about as bad as it gets. You're right. Three guys, vocal harmony, playing soft rock guitar. You know I need you. And you're just getting just smacked. Yeah, that would be the worst. I'm with you. Oh, and I guess I don't really have to explain why we did America. We both have lived in America before. And this last one is an album by the band Earth. The album is called Full Upon Her Burning Lips. It's the 9th studio album by the band Earth, and it was released on May 24, 2019 on Sargent House Records.
Yeah, I like Earth. I saved this one for last because of that.
You do like Earth. Okay, so you were familiar with Earth prior to this.
I really enjoyed the Angels of Darkness, Demons of Light albums that came out about 10 years ago.
Okay, cool. So I actually, prior to purchasing this, was not overly familiar with Earth. I actually bought it. I was cruising that Sargent House website. I bought it the same time I bought that Indian Handcrafts album we listened to last week. Got me free shipping. That's where this came from. So having experienced Earth before, maybe you can speak a little bit more to this album in context with the rest of their discography.
Yeah. So for me, this was is a breath of fresh air, real palate cleanser. It's doomy. It's drone. Glad I saved it for the end. I don't know. Like it's kind of metal, but it has slightly more rock elements. And when I say drone, I mean, I'm talking songs that can go 11, 12 minutes long.
Yeah. And they're the fastest note you got's a quarter note in a lot of these.
Yeah.
Always coming back to the same root note, just boom.
The reset. Yeah,
exactly. And then you've got the little tinkling of the kind of interesting percussion too on this offbeat stuff, weird instruments in there, a lot of kind of weirdness with the percussion. I did enjoy that quite a bit. I'm actually not going to say I loved this album. I liked it, but I did like her little, so the little percussion sounds in there.
Sure. Yeah. And I enjoy how, you know, you got to get comfy. This album opener is 12 minutes long and you're waiting for this dramatic build and finish because that's what so many people would do who are making songs this long. And it just kind of, it's like elastic, like it'll stretch out and then compress and then stretch out, but it never kind of reaches any form of zenith.
It doesn't. It was kind of, I don't know, anticlimactic in the sense of the actual definition of climax. Like it was just like just a long space to live in. Nothing really more than that.
I think that's fair. And to me, it's cautious. And I mean that in a good way, in that it's very measured. It could usually like easily build into a real overbearing beast of a record. So we've got this 11 minute long song. Let's see just how aggressive we can get in the last 4 minutes. But I think the stability makes their motif lasting and so good. Because I mean, God, they've been around for like 30 years or something.
Yeah, long time.
Yeah, I mean, long enough that Kurt Cobain sang vocals on their first EP or LP. I can't remember which.
Yeah, he and the guitarist and kind of founder of Earth here, Dylan Carlson, they were good friends, actually. Very good friends.
Did any other songs stand out to you for this?
Yes, they did. But by the same token, it really is kind of, I don't want to say it's one long song, but
yes,
it's not like you can say this track stuck out, this track stuck out. There are a couple. I mean, The Color of Poison, I like that one a lot. They actually introduced a few eighth notes and maybe a 16th note or two in that one. So it's a little bit more paced, faster paced, but really it is kind of an experience. It's a double album. So I've got two discs, so four sides to go through this whole thing.
I enjoyed She Rides in Air Malevolence, but I know exactly what you mean that it sounds like one long song. Cause I kind of got that about six songs in maybe where it kind of clicked that there wasn't really like a proper cutoff. It just kind of moved into the next piece and moved into the next piece.
Say it is instrumental. There are no vocals on this album. We're doing a lot of instrumental albums actually here off the jump. But a couple of my notes, this feels like one long song again. Actually, on She Rides, An Air of Malevolence, that one actually sounded very, very similar to the first song on the album. It's kind of like maybe even a callback. The thing about, you're talking about how it kind of one thing flows into the other. Yeah, it does. And when you've got four different album sides to listen to, you're flipping the disc a lot. And maybe that's one reason I didn't have an overwhelmingly positive take on this, just because I didn't get to hear it flowing into itself, I guess.
I can totally get that because if I'm stopping after the second track, flipping, you know, having 30, 45 seconds in between and kind of losing the technicality of it, I think that probably would have changed my perception as well. Like, look, am I going to rush out and buy an album or see them? No, but I dig and just respect what they're doing. And the fact that they're still, it's only two of them.
Yeah. Dylan Carlson is the guy that's been in it the longest. And then you've got Adrian Davies on the percussion.
Yeah, it clicked for me for some reason.
I would say I would like to listen to this while I'm doing something else.
Mm.
So if I'm doing like some sort of a tedious little task that I have to really concentrate on, I kind of would like this sort of thing going on while I'm doing it. Just pictured myself tinkering with something really small and just having this thing blasting in the background. I could do that. I think I would enjoy it more in that setting than just sitting there and listening to it.
If you're just sitting there, it does require a lot of attention. I definitely had it on the background and I was kind of scooting around to different things at times. Yeah, I imagine it takes a lot of energy and focus to just sit and listen to this. I don't think I could be in that headspace.
That's what I tried to do. And maybe that's what like it. I seriously sat there in my basement, dim lights, staring and listening to this.
That's
I don't know. Maybe that wasn't the right environment for me to listen to this album. Man, I just sit there in silence and listen to these. Occasionally my comes down and farts on me.
Nothing unsettling.
Yes.
About that. Just sitting there in silence, dim light.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to the 13-minute long Duran metal.
Staring at a 2x4.
Yeah, you could contemplate a lot while listening to this album.
Like I said, there's a lot of space to move around in here because they're not playing a lot of quick 16th notes or anything.
All right, let's get into this final segment. Something called Didn't See That Coming. In this, we ask each other one random question related to today's albums / today's topics. Jay, what do you got for me?
Hit me first. You fire one at me here.
Okay, so we've talked about albums and artists related to places where we lived. If you were to live in a place a band or artist was named after, which would you choose and why? And it doesn't have to be from today. It could be any.
A band or artist was named after. Man.
Could also be an album title.
I'm thinking, man. I'm thinking. Yeah. Yeah. Let's say. Could I say John Denver? Just Denver. I'd love to live in Denver. But I actually almost.
That's a really good answer. I wasn't even thinking about John Denver.
Obviously not named after Denver, but his name's Denver.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's a good one.
So my question to you is, we've got Kansas, a band from Kansas playing about Kansas, and we've got Boston, a band from Boston. So if you were to have a band represent where you are from, what band would you feel is the band that most represents where you are from?
This one's tough because... Well, I mean, first off, so I'm from West Virginia, so it's not like we have a wealth of of artists to choose from. I would say that my answer is going to be Hazel Dickens. So Hazel Dickens is a bluegrass old folk country singer. Okay. She wrote so. A lot of people don't realize this. West Virginia actually has 3 state songs, not just one. So we, of course, have Take Me Home Country Roads. We have Oh, the West Virginia Hills. And we have one called West Virginia, My Home, which is easily my favorite. And it's a song that she wrote. And it's just beautiful. It's so comforting. And when I listen to that, like all those songs make me miss home, but that one especially. And I feel like she captures kind of the old rugged Appalachia better than anyone else.
Nice, dude. I'm going to have to check that out because I've never heard that. And I would like to because it sounds really, really cool.
Yeah, she's, I mean, you're going to hear a lot of like real classic bluegrass and folk stuff like some dulcimer and this and that. It's nice stuff. It's old timey for sure.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to check that out. It sounds like it's right up my alley.
So friends, no matter where you live and whether a band is named after it or not, we're glad you joined us tonight. Thanks to everyone for listening today. And over the first month, we're 1 month in. If you liked what you heard, please subscribe, give us a 5-star rating, and tell others about it. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at JayandJoeyPod. If you want to reach out to us, jayandjoeypod@gmail.com. We have playlists for every episode on Spotify in the show notes. And be good to each other.